It's time for ESPN Las Vegas legal insider Justin Watkins with Battleborn Injury Lawyers, only on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Okay, we had that was some good discoveries right there. We everyone knows, like, I love college football. I like being on this UNLV beat. I'm part of the broadcast team. We will generally get an expert on to talk about the opposing school, the football team, do some fact-finding. There's always part of the conversation where it moves towards, where are we going? Okay, where does the broadcast group go to hang out? So we just had a guy on Terry Bridge who calls the games for, he's a color voice from Miami, Ohio. And I was asking him, hey, where do we go? And he's like, come to my place. He's like, Terry B's. So he's got a bar.
That's cool. You know, my wife did a summer program when she was in college at Miami of Ohio, and she is like hidden gem of college towns, super awesome, super fun place to be. So I'm a little jealous that you get to go. I hear it's just awesome.
And he was awesome. He checked all the boxes. He had the accent. Okay. He gave us great information and then hooked him up with a place to go that even has karaoke on Friday night for them.
So where you sit on the, on this one? On the line? On the, it's 2.5, right? You know,
well, hold on. UNLV, okay. Yeah. Let me get this one more thing real quick, because I have something for you. I think you listen enough, and we don't talk about this all the time, but sporadically. I was asking Terry about Cincinnati-style chili.
Okay.
So they got their change there. We will have a Skyline here eventually, or Gold Star.
Yeah.
And I think one will do well.
Yes.
We get in kind of late. Well, more importantly, I'm doing the show until 9 o'clock Eastern time.
Okay.
You know, so we usually go hang somewhere, get some local food. I may not go with the group and just go to one of the freaking chili fast food places. Or, who was saying it yesterday? Willie Ramirez is like, no, have Caleb Herring try the chili. And I'm like, I'm telling you, Caleb's very finicky.
I'm a huge chili fan.
But
so
this
I say
Cincinnati chili.
Yeah, that's great.
It's different.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
You got to go.
I'm shocked. Oh, I'm going.
Yeah.
Believe me, I already said.
Why are you shocked? Why wouldn't I?
Everyone hates it.
No, so
everyone
what?
Everyone I talk to on the show, everyone's like, oh, it sucks.
Yeah, who cares?
Chili spaghetti, five-way onions, the cheese. I'm like, it's great. It's junk food. It's great.
Yeah.
We don't have it here.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a big chili fan. I mean, beans, no beans, you know, fully loaded, all that stuff. I don't love a ton of sour cream. That's about my only rule. Some of it's in there is okay, but I'm a big chili fan. So I say, hey, when in Rome, you got to do it. I'm jealous of that trip. I think that's sneaky, maybe the best trip you guys got this year.
Really?
Yes.
Stadium looks cool. I haven't done a lot of research on it. I've tried to, but looks like a cool town. Yeah. I always worry about small town America kind of rolling up the sidewalks a little too early for me. But it also is a noon kickoff. We have to be at the stadium by like 8 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, so you know, get your beauty sleep. You don't need to be up that late.
Beauty sleep? I'm not on TV. Go out there freaking half wrecked. I'll be good by noon.
Okay.
Full of chili and full of a couple beers.
Are you traveling with the team?
We travel with the team.
Is that Thursday?
No, it's Friday.
Oh. I thought we talked about the traveling situation.
To the Eastern time zone, that's not. It's Ohio. It's not. You know, if they were going all the way across, if they're going to like Florida or something, or Georgia or South Carolina, you know, to New York. Although New York has no college football team, Syracuse sucks, or Jersey. Then I think it's different. But
okay.
I do think it is a factor. So let's break down the game.
Okay.
I do think the early start can be a factor.
Yeah.
Went back. The last couple weeks, they've been practicing mostly at night to get ready for night starts. They went back this week to practicing in the morning because they're going to play a 9 a.m. Pacific time game. That's the kickoff. I talked to Jake Pope, safety on the defense. He said that's what he likes. I talked to James Famenu, one of the tackles. Now, this was in reference to the late game. That was 2 weeks before, and he's like, I like the night practices because it's cooler.
Yeah.
I would be a fan, and I'm not a morning person, but I'd be a fan of practicing in the morning. But I still think 9 a.m. local, I don't know that your body adjusts to that. Like, practicing at 9 a.m. is one thing. Like, going full bore in a game is different. So I think that's a factor.
I think so, too. You got to be – I mean, if you're playing the game at 9, I mean, your body's got to be up and moving. I would say at 6, maybe college kids would say 7, but there's definitely no way that you're letting yourself sleep past 7 – and, you know, remembering my college days, kids didn't like waking up at 7 a.m. back then. So I think it's got to be a factor. You know, I think I don't know how well attended Miami games are.
I think there'll be a good crowd there.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I think UNLV's got some cachet now, you know, being ranked the last two seasons at different points. I think they'll draw a crowd. So I don't know. When I first looked at the line and saw UNLV laying 2.5, I don't know if it's still at 2.5. I was like, that seems right, and I didn't want to touch it.
I made it a little higher. I made it 4, and then I saw, I think they actually opened it maybe 3.5 across that number, but they took the points down to 2.5. I thought that was a little surprised. I thought it was a little disrespectful to UNLV, but I understand the travel spot, the time, all of that is being factored in. So I think it was more of just a number play, if anything. But I mean, I think what Terry just said is correct. I think UNLV is going to be the best offense that they've seen so far. Now, defensively, I don't know if they're as good as these Big Ten teams. So maybe they can get their offense going a little bit too. But I mean, Finn's had 3 interceptions already this year, so it could have some takeaways as well. So I like the Rebels. I think they get it done.
Their 2 games were Rutgers and Wisconsin, right?
Yeah.
You think UNLV is going to be the best offense that they see?
That's what this guy just said, yeah, Terry Bridge.
I mean,
I don't think
maybe that's possible, but by far it's going to be the worst defense they've seen.
Yeah.
You know, they haven't had a chance to really put up. Who knows? I don't know what their offense is.
I'll say the Rutgers defense is a work in progress, just like UNLV.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a great defense right now. The most dangerous offense they faced, I'm not going to diss Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Rutgers offense. You know, the funny thing is he didn't give any love to the Rutgers quarterback, who I think is leading the Big Ten in yardage.
He did a little bit.
Kalik Manish, yeah.
Yeah, he did say that they have a good quarterback.
They have multiple good receivers. I don't know if they're a great offense. So anyway, well, let's not go too deep divey on that part of it. although we are going to get into Rutgers and Iowa as one of our college football games. So, okay, so where are you guys going? So you're both laying
I'm out.
Wins?
No. I'm out.
Lean or like. Okay.
I just can't touch it. The 9 a.m. thing really does throw me. I do think they should be favored, but favored on the road. I think Miami playing those two opponents, you can look at it one of two ways. One, that's setting them up for success as they go on. They won't be intimidated by a UNLV team, right? They've played, you know, some pretty big powers out there, power conference teams. But it didn't really show a lot in those two games for us to get a lot of perspective of how they would be against a non-power conference team. And arguably right now, you put UNLV right in the category of a power conference team. When you start talking about top 25 teams, you know, Wisconsin, neither Wisconsin or Rutgers are in the top 25. UNLV's right there with them. So I think they're similarly situated teams.
I think group of 6 versus group of 6, even if they're, we'll say, 20 of the best group of 6 teams, I still think early in the season it's hard to get a good read.
Yep.
The opponents, that's a key thing with Miami of Ohio, but these schools are so transfer portal heavy because they lose so many to the portal. And in the case of UNLV, they have a new coach, so they turned over the roster. So, I mean, the analyst was saying 20-plus new players out of the portal. I was like, oh, that's it? I mean,
that's here and nothing.
Now.
That's
and
nothing.
It really is nothing. And UNLV consistently has been in the 30 to 35 range, if not over 40. And this is still a very much a developmental offense.
Mm-hmm.
The offensive line, we can get into the issues there, but the defense is very developmental. They have guys with a lot of experience from big schools, but that doesn't mean they're all together yet. And they've had really good moments in games, like the UCLA first half. And then stopping UCLA on the final drive, that was good. But the third quarter wasn't. There were moments in both. Obviously, the Idaho State game went down to the wire. Idaho State ran all over them. And Sam Houston State had some success here and there. So the UNLV defense, that's the question. They need, you know, right now they're I think they're allowing 450 total yards per game. So that can't keep up. You're gonna have to get a lot more sturdy if you're gonna win. You know, what they think they want, you know, 8, 9, 10 games.
I mean, my opinion is, like, you don't get to take any benefit from that UCLA game first half of stopping UCLA. UCLA is just nothing now. They just completely fell apart. And they almost gave that game back in the whole second half. Yeah. The Idaho State game, the only reason they won that game is because of the turnovers that they were able to generate – And I would say half the, you know, two of those interceptions they generated. The other two turnovers were absolutely Idaho State just giving the ball away. And so, you know, I think that to me, UNLV's glaring weakness that is unpredictable at this point is their defense. I don't know what I'm going to get. And if you told me that UNLV won this game 48-42, it wouldn't surprise me. I'd be like, okay, yeah. They just gave up a whole bunch of yards on defense and something happened. That could happen. But they could also keep them under 20. I don't know.
If I told you Oregon beats Oregon State 73-10.
I would say more likely than not.
What is going on? Justin.
Yeah. Well, wait.
In Las Vegas. What's happened?
Before I get attacked for my alumni.
You. I'm concerned for you and your well-being and your mental health.
Hey,
you were bullish going into the season.
I was.
OS Beaver and all the other Beaver fans.
I know.
Calling UNLV poverty school.
Yeah. It doesn't change the finances. Yeah. You guys still are poverty school. But I would say this.
By the way, I didn't go to UNLV, so it's not you guys.
Before we start,
Alex,
another week of 3-2, so I'm still above 500. 1-0 last week against the champ.
The gambling stuff's coming
against the champ. I'm just building my credentials.
Talk about the Beavers.
To say that Oregon State is done for this year. They're done. They're done. Like coaches lost the locker room. It's over.
How do you know?
Have you watched these games?
That's why I have you on.
Oh my goodness! I've never seen the lack of discipline. Hmm. To the level, I mean, we're talking minimum 5 false starts a game. Minimum. I think last game there was 9 of them, right? And 5 holding calls. And they still can't snap the ball on special teams. I mean, when people have not watched these games and they hear me say they cannot snap the ball, they're like, oh, man, they must have some problems. They literally cannot snap the ball to a punter or to a place kicker. They scored 7 straight touchdowns and did not convert an extra point after that. Not a 2-point conversion, not a single point. They could not snap the ball.
I got to pull up my app here. Minus 35?
To the holder. They couldn't snap the ball to the holder. It's gotten so bad on punts that they are pooch punting every punt right now. They are not deep setting. So the punt goes like 25 yards. Hmm. It's over. It's over. Wow. The only reason that Oregon State stays within 35 points of Oregon is if Oregon feels bad for them. I swear. Like, they are going to have to pull all their starters. I think it's possible.
What?
I think it's possible that they pull all their starters up 40-something that half.
Wow.
And
I know he didn't feel bad for Mike Gundy.
No. Well, it's different.
After Gundy laid down the smack talk.
I mean, Dan Lanning and Oregon are somewhat contributorily responsible for exactly where Oregon State's at, right? Like, this was not a program that was a losing program before the Pac-12 exodus. They were 10th in the country at the time of the Pac-12 collapse. So, you know, Oregon, Washington, UCLA, and USC have some responsibility for that. And it's going to be a while before we get ourselves back out of it.
I got to get to a little Dabo Sweeney on the way back.
Yeah.
He fired back again. He's had a couple of press conference moments, like the one after the LSU game where he gave everyone low grades, and then Brian Kelly got all pissed off and said, man, that guy's a real hard grader. You're listening to Cofield & Company, ESPN Las Vegas, as we approach the halfway point of the show. This part of the show every day in Reno and Sparks in Northern Nevada and here in Southern Nevada is brought to you by Battleborn Injury Lawyers. Call from anywhere in the state, 766-1400 in the north. 775-766-1400.
Live from the Battleborn Broadcast Center, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Let's hear from Dabo Sweeney.
If you don't believe in us because we've lost 2 games down to the last straight and we're 1, you didn't believe in us anyway, so it don't matter. You weren't all in anyway. If you're all in, you burn the ships, man. There ain't no exit strategy. Like, you're freaking all in. And hey, listen, I mean, if Clemson's tired of winning, they send me on my way, but I'm going to go somewhere else and coach. I ain't going to the beach. Hell, I'm 55. I got a long way to go. Y'all going to have to deal with me for a while. I got a long way to go. I'm just getting going. I'm just now good enough to be a head coach.
Okay, a little self-deprecation at the end there. That's kind of ridiculous. But Dabo Swinney really addressing fans. I would not want to be a media person in there because he's like asking questions like, that's pretty good, right? Pretty good. It's just like, whatever. You know what you're doing. I'm not going to be part of your performance.
Yeah.
But they are 1-2. They lost two close games. Give me your read on Clemson. Their top wide receiver is dinged up. But I do believe there has been a little bit of a talent drop-off on offense with Clemson. I'm going to point to the reason, and I mentioned it the last couple of years. He won't use the transfer portal, which then requires you to be freaking like 80% on your recruit hits. And the portal, even at the biggest programs, it's not being desperate. You have to fill holes. Sometimes your rooms, your position rooms, just don't have the talent you thought it was going to have. Go fill in, but he won't do it.
I'm really concerned with Cade Klubnik. And before those remarks, after the loss, he came out with remarks just kind of throwing his quarterback under the bus, and I didn't really like that. I don't know if that's how they operate and he thinks that's going to motivate him, but I think that number two really didn't do anything that they needed, and dudes got to be dudes. Like, I don't know. I felt like he kind of just threw everything on his quarterback, and I think that's a disconnect, right? He's supposed to be the leader on the field through Dabo, and if they're not matching up, I don't know. That's my read so far.
I like it. I mean, I like what he's saying. I think that there is room and space to be different than what everybody's doing, right? Like, so if you're a traditionalist and you got a parent who's a traditionalist and grew up in the college football, and you can go into that kid's house and you say, "Hey, you've got 5 years with me. I'm not going to send you into the portal. You know, once you're with me, you're with me. I'm not going to go get a portal replacement for you either. You know, this is like it's always been." I think there's some room for that, and that might actually be a recruiting advantage at the high school level. And I will say this. When you've got a coach that got you 2 national titles, 8 playoffs in 10 years, we are still in a changing system. And the portal might not be what it's been the last 3 years in 2 years. And so if I were a Clemson fan, I might say, hey, this ain't our year. We might not make the playoff this year, but that's my guy. I would still 100% be behind that my guy, because we might just be 2 years away from multi-year NIL revenue share contracts that lock these kids up, and everybody is right back where we used to be, which is a 4-year or 5-year contract.
I hope not.
And I hope not too. But
I love this era.
Me too. But I'm telling you, well, I shouldn't say me too. I love it.
You don't love all of it.
I don't love all of it. But I think I like the power that the players have, and I like that they're using it. But my point is this is much more likely to be a ship that's righted within the next 5 years. Go lean back towards Dabo Swinney's way of coaching and running a program than not. So you give me 2 championships in 10 years, I'm with you. You've earned a lot.
Time for the pro versus the Joe. Although Justin's results have been un-Joe-like.
That's right.
Alex, of course, winner of multiple last man, woman standings in the past in the Circa Invitational. She is the pro. Justin's leans and likes for week 4. Let's roll through these. NC State against Duke.
So I got it. NC State is at +3 on my app, and I think they're going to win outright. I bet a money line. I don't think Duke is anywhere near where they thought they were going to be. They have not performed well. NC State hasn't been sterling, but each week they've gotten a little bit better from the prior week. You know, they barely beat Ohio in week 1, but they've gotten steadily better. I like their trajectory. I don't like Duke's, and I think there's going to be plenty of NC State fans at the Duke game.
Pro?
I'm not touching this game because I have been one of those bettors that have been backing Duke the last couple weeks. I thought last week was a buy low. 2 weeks ago, they got steamrolled by Illinois, even though the box score doesn't really say that. But I do like, I made it 2.5. I would lean to taking the points because I know revenge gets thrown out a little bit too much, but there is one scenario that I really like it, and that is when one team goes to the other place and beats them in their stadium, and the other team has a chance for revenge to do that back. That's NC State. They can go to Duke and beat them. Duke won 29-19 last year.
Friday night tilt. Rutgers hosting Iowa, getting 2.5.
Yeah, 2.5 on my app. Again, I got a money line bet on this one. I think Rutgers is the better team. I think they're going to win this game outright. I think Iowa is not the Iowa that it's been in the past, meaning they still suck at offense. They've always sucked at offense, but their defense is not what it used to be. Their loss to Iowa State is looking worse after how Iowa State played against Arkansas State. I watched that game because I was at the gym and I was bored, and it was on the TV. Arkansas State outplayed Iowa State in that game and should have won that game. So I don't think that Iowa's got any really quality opponents right now that I've seen. And I think Rutgers, again, I like the trajectory that they're going. They're, you know, they're coming in 3-0. They hasn't been perfect, but each week has gotten steadily better.
I'm with Justin on this one because I made Rutgers a 1-point favorite. So I thought there was some value grabbing 2.5 with Rutgers, and I think they're pretty even. My only concern is Gronowski finally looked good in his last game and finally was throwing the ball, so maybe their offense can get going a little bit, but he had 179 yards, but that was against UMass. So this is a different opponent here against Rutgers.
Total's 45. I'll go under.
Yeah.
Yep. I like that.
And you're on the opposite as us, right? Going up against
But I do that a lot. But I'm also looking at the series, and they've only played, you know, recently two times, and Kirk Ferentz has just coached the pants off of Greg Schiano. Schiano's very conservative, so it plays right into Ferentz's hands. And in this case, they can actually throw the ball, so they should wing it around the yard, but I don't know if he's going to do it. We'll see. Hawaii got good news with the guy who played right up the road from where we are, Battleborn Injury Lures, or Bishop Gorman, and Micah Alihato. He is a full go in practice. Fresno's coming to Hawaii.
Yep.
Rainbow Warriors are 3-1. They survived. They won two games. Portland State's no good, but they won with Weaver the backup. Alihato's going to be back in there. They're getting 2.5 at home.
Getting 2.5 against Fresno State. Fresno State's marquee win right now is against Oregon State in a game with literally 6 muffed kicks and punts. Okay? And they ended up winning by 2 scores, but that was a last-minute pick 6. They barely won that game. When you get that many turnovers, you should blow the other team out. I'm not a believer in Fresno State. I'm a baby believer in Hawaii, and I always get a little baby bump belief when they're playing at home and somebody's got to travel there. So I like Hawaii, and I'm getting points. I like it.
Pro? Yeah,
that's why I can't go head-to-head on this one because I've got a no play. I lean to Fresno getting the points. They've got home revenge too, but I'm not that impressed with what I've seen. I also think I might have been a little bit too low on Hawaii to start the season. Haven't really got to upgrade them yet, but now that they have their starting quarterback, this will kind of be the game to tell me.
Pro versus Joe. Justin Watkins against, and he's the Joe, going up against Alex White. I screwed that up. I had it backwards. Okay, one more. Actually, a couple more leans and likes from Justin. Auburn at Oklahoma.
So everything in the world tells me that Oklahoma should be the team that everybody picks here, and I find myself believing in Auburn. I rode them out in the first week. They came to me. I don't think Oklahoma is as good as everybody thinks that they are yet. Now, I might be proven wrong in this game if they come out and really put on a display, but I've seen enough of Auburn Tigers to make me think that they – getting 6.5, I like that number. I obviously wish it was 7, but 6.5 is a pretty big number. I feel that they're going to keep this close.
I will say last weekend, if you took points with the big SEC matchups, it was pretty profitable. I mean, A&M against Notre Dame, not an SEC. But besides Florida, I mean, Arkansas covered. Who else? There was another big one that did cover, too, at a number like this. But I'm leaning the other way, so this could be considered our head-to-head, even though I was on Baylor in week one, so that's kind of a bad idea here. But Jackson Arnold goes back to Oklahoma. I think Oklahoma has their guy in John Mateer. He's been fantastic. I think Brent Venables has the better defense at home. I know Hugh Freeze really wants that revenge and wants to go in there and beat them straight up, but I think Oklahoma can win by a touchdown.
Okay. All right.
Let's fire on this one. Colorado State at home against UTSA.
So, Colorado State being at home, like my thought process here is I think UTSA is a little bit better of the team. I do think that, although we don't have a ton of evidence against like any sort of common opponents or big opponents yet, but I do think UTSA is slightly better team. But Colorado State has got that elevation that UTSA is not used to. You know, we're high up in the mountains there. They're at 6,000 feet. I think that's going to play a factor. They're at home. I do think they'll draw. They have been drawing good crowds at home for the last 2 years. Colorado State has, 35,000 plus. I think they'll have a good crowd. So I think when I'm getting 4.5 points, felt pretty good. If it had been under 3, I probably wouldn't have taken it, but over 3 I like.
I've got nothing on this one. I thought the number was just right.
Northern Nevada, make sure you sign up for a William Hill mobile sports betting account. Then you can bet on the go from anywhere in the state of Nevada, whether you're north or south. You can check out places like Bonanza Casino, Boomtown Casino, Border Town Casino, Club Cal Neva. That's one of my favorite places. Gold West. So check that. Gold Dust in West Reno. And, of course, the Grand Sierra. Lots of places in Northern Nevada with a William Hill book. And right now they're offering a $250 first deposit match. If you do not have the account, I do want to update people. I'm pretty happy with the results so far. The Pro Pick'em, the SO is actually making the selections, my girlfriend, and she is out to a 23-5 start. Now, to win the $10,000 prize weekly, you got to go 15-0 or 14-1, but I'm telling her, come on now. Yeah. Come on. 215 wins for the season. It's doable. I mean, that's an incredible clip. We'll see if she can do it. Sign up for that's the awesome. Mobile app from William Hill right now.
Live from the Battleborn Broadcast Center, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Justin Watkins here on ESPN Las Vegas. Battleborn Injury Lawyers hosting the show today, as they do on most Wednesdays. We appreciate that. 766-1400 is the call from anywhere in the state of Nevada. Number 775 in the north. All right, so we got to pick games on the NFL card. Last week, fell short on a couple games that I thought we had a chance at, but just 2-3, 5-5 on the season. I have a bunch of leans here. I'll go through them quickly. Just tell me, get the hell out. You have no interest. I'm wrong. Browns plus 8 against the Packers.
I like it. I think rightfully so. Packers are getting a lot of love for the way that they're playing, but I don't think the Browns are as bad as they seem to be. I think their defense can hang with the Packers' offense. The question is whether or not the Browns can move the ball against the Packers' defense. But I like it.
I don't love it, okay. But...
I knew you would say that.
I could be talked into. It's a lot of points
in
the NFL.
Betting on bad teams, right? Believe me, I got on the Browns plus 19.5 in game. And it was 20-3. It got to 20-10. I'm like, oh, I'm alive here. And then it was like a freaking blowout. And then Derrick Henry did nothing. That was the amazing part.
Yeah.
Just sloppy football. And Joe Flacco it's not good. Yeah. Bengals plus 3.5 against the Vikings. Battle of the backups.
Ooh. You want the Bengals?
Yes.
I think Carson Wentz is gonna. I think he's gonna tear it up. Yes. I think he's gonna have a big game. And I think this could be a high scoring affair. So I like the over. It's 41.5. I think there's going to be a lot of points put up here. I'm on the Vikings on this one.
I like the Vikings, too. Okay. I think there's a known drop-off with the Bengals quarterbacks. We don't know if there's really a drop-off from J.J. McCarthy to Carson Wentz yet.
Oh, I think there's an upgrade temporarily. I mean, McCarthy's still, he's still learning, and he may end up being a better quarterback. But I personally think Wentz is the best backup quarterback in the NFL right now.
Lean Steelers 1.5 on the road against the Patriots.
I like this. Yes. I think the Steelers are a better team. I don't think New England is really that competitive right now. I don't think Drake May's taking the step that everybody thought he was going to take. And so the Steelers are unpredictable. They're a little bit all over the place, but I feel confident they're going to put points up. So I like that.
Let's go rapid fire. Seahawks laying 7.5. I almost never do this. 7.5 against the Saints.
I'm not touching it.
Yeah, I don't love the number there with the hook. The Saints have been competitive in the first two games.
Anything under 7, I would have liked.
The circuit card comes out tomorrow, so we'll see if it changes. It comes out Thursday morning, so I don't have to lock in these numbers yet. Bears plus 1 against the Cowboys.
Yeah, I could get there. I mean, I think that the Cowboys...
It's not a rousing endorsement.
I think the Cowboys' defense is... below average, so yeah. I think that this could be an opportunity for the Bears to get their offense going.
Your guy, Caleb Williams! He texts me in the middle of the day, he's like, drop that guy on your fantasy team. Yeah. I'm like, he still scored!
No, he's terrible! Come on, he still scored!
He's the backup quarterback.
Dude, he's gotta be ranked in fantasy. He's gotta... No, he's your... have four, and you were like, which one should I drop?
I dropped Caleb Smith, I have Aaron Rodgers, because I had an auto-draft issue. Okay, so you're out on the Bears. You're not on the Bears.
Yes. I mean, I think the Bears could be competitive, but I just don't know. Both of those teams are a little bit unpredictable for me yet, so I don't want to touch it.
And then I had a lean of Niners minus 1.5 against the Cardinals, whether it's Mac Jones or Purdy, who like miraculously could return.
Again, I think that based on last week, we might not be dealing with any drop-off between the quarterbacks. I thought Mac Jones looked way better than Brock Purdy has looked with that offense in the time that he had last week. I mean, real good.
What's your NFL lean? Texans?
So I want the Texans' money line. Like, the fact that you're getting points with the Texans against Jacksonville, I don't see it that way. I mean, I know they're on the road, but I think Texans can't be more motivated than they are now. They can't start 0-3. You know, now we're going to get into division, and they got to win the division. And it's there for the taking. That division's the weakest division. So I think they're going to come out and win this game.
I like that one.
Okay.
A lot.
We're going to get your leaner like a little later in the show, Alex. And I feel like you had like a lot more college football to go. You're fired up.
Well,
the season's awesome. And let me tell you, we got 10 seconds left, but this is why I love what's going on right now, because I looked at the schedule this week, and I'm like, oh, my God, this early in the season, there's all these toss-up games. Teams at the bottom are better than they used to be. Teams at the top in conferences. It's going to be great. Justin, appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Live from the Battleborn Broadcast Center, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Time for the Eye on Sports Gambling. It is brought to you every day by Jackson's Bar and Grill, 6020 West Flamingo. We bring in John Von Tobel here with Alex White, Alexandra White, and Steve Cofield. JVT, let's get right to it. A little college football coming out, then we'll get to some NFL. How good is Cal? Can you say the quarterback's name? And does SDSU, San Diego State, really stink this much to be getting this many points?
Yeah, Jaren Kiave Sangapuatele is the name for the Cal quarterback. Now, I will say, I did have a little unfair practice because my colleague Stormy Bonatoni, who I co-host with on VSiN, has had Cal twice this year for the sidelines. So I've heard her say the name a ton. But look, this is one where her and I were going back and forth on it quite a bit. Your point of this upgrade that we've seen from them, that's a big number for a Cal team that many thought was not going to win the games. And that's a really big upgrade. I am just in the face of an upgrade, tempted to take San Diego State. The problem is, if you look at some of their numbers,
two bookend pass rushers that are really, really good. It's a good front seven that can stop the run. San Diego State can't stop the run. I just don't see much statistically to back up San Diego State.
Sorry, I think I got connected to Bluetooth. But, yeah, I just don't see that much that would statistically point me to San Diego State outside of, wow, that's a big number.
Texas Tech and Utah are playing at 10 a.m. in Salt Lake. Salt Lake time, 10 a.m. Kind of an important game, but basically a toss-up based on, at least the number says it, based on home field. You like the Tech side?
Yeah, I know, man. I don't know. Why would you assume such a thing? I like Utah. I'm a Devin Dampier guy. Like, I think this kid was great in New Mexico. You and I have talked about him a little bit when I've come on here on Wednesdays. It's a great offensive line. He's barely been pressured. Texas Tech themselves have a good couple of pass rushers, but a lot of those numbers might be derived from playing some lesser competition. Going on the road to play in this sort of environment's a big deal. This defense for Utah is very good. I think that this is a spot where we're starting to see a couple of shops not here in Las Vegas poking up at 2.5 to the juice side. Man, if this is going to get under 3, give me Utah all day. I think at worst they are equals with Texas Tech. And if we're going to get under a key number, which I'm holding out for, I am all about the Utes.
Purdue was able to cover against USC at home. Can they cover 2 weeks in a row now going up against Notre Dame?
I think so. I don't know how you feel about Notre Dame, Alex, but their defense might stink. You know, we've had two games here against some, we'll call them, similar competition to themselves. And Texas A&M and Miami both ran roughshod all over that defense. They were generating explosive plays through the air. They were running the ball relatively well. Like, I don't think, to invoke my colleague one more time, Stormy Bonatoni, I was telling her, because she was making the case to maybe look at Texas A&M to win the to get to the SEC championship, to get to, not to win it. And I was like, I don't know. Like, I'm not going to use this performance from Marcel Reed and this offense as a springboard to believe that they're going to be good, because I just think Notre Dame might be bad. You know, if you look at the Notre Dame EPA metrics, they're very middle of the pack, floating around the 70s, 80s in that regard in the country. So I think Purdue, which has shown the ability to generate their own explosives. They were never outside of that number against USC. Granted, it was a weird delayed game due to weather. They showed, as shockingly enough as we found out here, that Barry Odom can get a group together and create a confident group, or excuse me, a competent group. I think they're going to stay inside of this number again on the road against Notre Dame.
What are you doing with this one? Hawaii catching points at home versus Fresno State.
I think it's still, I missed out. I think there's a bunch of 2.5s out there. Haven't seen a 3 that I could grab. But if I'm going to get a full 3, give me Hawaii. Looks like Mike Alejado is going to be back. He's got 2 weeks off to heal up. So that's going to be a good sign for him. The one thing that bothers me about Fresno, like, their running game is great. They're averaging over 6 yards per carry. They've got 3 guys that are averaging over 5 yards per carry that have taken snaps at halfback. Like, this is a group that on the ground looks very formidable. The problem is E.J. Warner kind of stinks. He's got 4 touchdowns and 5 interceptions. He's committing turnover-worthy plays at a really high rate. I'm not sure if I trust Fresno entirely on defense, but the fact that Hawaii's back at home, and I think this is going to be an interesting angle. Granted, teams at home are always going to play hard, but Hawaii really has, I think, these home games circled for them. These are the big opportunities. If they can sweep the board in these home games, they're going bowling, and that's going to be a really big deal for them. I think it's going to be a charged environment that Timmy Chang has maybe even been looking ahead to a little bit. So, yeah, give me Hawaii after coming off of that performance last week where I don't think they were putting everything out there because they were getting ready for conference opener against the Bulldogs.
Let's hit some NFL here with JVT. The Eagles, a little underwhelming in the first 2 games, and now we know the Rams have some revenge from playoff time. Are you taking 3.5 with Stafford and company?
I am. You know, I think I've voiced this to you guys, but that second corner spot for Philadelphia, I think, is a little bit of a red flag. Obviously, we saw Jacorian Bennett play out here. Adoree Jackson is in that room, and he's playing that position. Those two are kind of rotating a little bit at that corner position. And if that outside corner is going to be a little bit of a problem against the Sean McVay offense, torn plantar fascia or not, I think that he can really coordinate something here. And on the flip side, look, I like the Rams defensively. Like, that's a good front seven that has a lot of young talent in it. And on the other end, I'm not sure if I trust Philadelphia's bookends either. Josh Uche had one pressure last week. Jalen Hunt didn't have any. They kind of showed out in week 1 against Dallas, but I think that says more about Dallas' offensive line than it does about what these edge rushers can do. And so if I'm right, and if the second corner spot on the outside is a question, if they don't really have any edge rushers, that's good for Matthew Stafford. And I think this is a pretty good game for them. And then you already mentioned the revenge, right? They can hang the banner. We came the closest to beating the Eagles last year in the playoffs, and really it wasn't even that close. I think all this put together, give me the Los Angeles Rams to stay inside of that number against Philly.
After hearing about the McVay injury, I actually made my Eagles number -6. So I don't like his plan. Oh, okay. He says he's going to be hobbling around. I think he needs to use the 1-foot cart. I think he's going to make a mistake going out there trying to hobble around. Could re-injure it. Could be out for the game.
What if he can't get to the sideline quick enough to throw a challenge flag and they miss out on it because of the plantar fascia?
These are things that matter. He's happy that he tore it because now he can have a quicker recovery, but it's a very painful injury. JVT is with us. He's the host of JVT's Saturday Football Preview Show at the Westgate. No show this week with the early start for UNLV over at Westgate. Of course, Sundays, I am out there, and they've got tremendous specials like the $20 bucket. You get a free bucket of beer with a download of the mobile app. In the mornings, you got a breakfast burrito, bacon, egg, and cheese, sausage, egg, and cheese, tremendous viewing opportunities in the Superbook. Same screens are in the International Theater during Football Central. That opens up at 9 o'clock. All right, NFL spots. Your Colts against the Titans.
So I'm tempted to come back and play against Indy here, but I wanted to check, so I haven't had a chance to dig into it. Maybe you guys have the info. We saw that go to 4.5 today at a couple of spots, so maybe I'm missing something. I think J.C. Treader, it was one of the injuries for the Titans, so maybe that's going to be something. Or J.C. Latham, I'm sorry, I mix up the names. That's going to be there, but that's not worth the full point move that we've seen. Look, I like to do this thing on Fridays for their show at VSiN. They call Market Power Ratings. It's taking where the market's at for these games, calculating for home field. I use 1.5, and seeing where these teams fall for a market power rating perspective. The Colts have risen up the board astronomically when you look at where they were in week 1 and where they are now. Let's just do this simple example. They're up to 4.5-point favorites, guys. The Rams closed as 5.5-point favorites there last week. Are they really just that one point different from this Los Angeles Rams team? I think we're at an all-time high for this power rating, and you know me, Steve. I like to buy low in those spots. Still a banged up secondary, and don't look now, but Josh Downs and Tyler Warren missed practice for the Colts today. So give me the Tennessee Titans plus 4.5, barring any injury news that I have yet to uncover and the reason why that's up to 4.5.
Falcons at the Panthers.
This one is going to be a play of stubbornness. I was all over the Carolina Panthers last year from their game in Germany where they beat the Giants and bet on them every game down the stretch, save for one. It was when they closed the favorites at home against the Cowboys. They actually ended up not getting there. I loved this team. And if you look at, if you eliminate, which you can't, but I will, if you eliminate the first two drives for the Carolina Panthers on Sunday, the rest of the game, Bryce Young was the guy who he was last year, and I think that's still there. We know that there's a cornerback injury for Atlanta that might be pretty impactful as well. I'm going to give this one last shot. I've been on the Carolina Panthers the first 2 weeks. They got in the back door last week. They didn't get there against the Jags. I'm going to give this one more chance and say that they can stay inside of that big number. I think it's still 5.5 against the Atlanta Falcons.
Backup battle, Bengals and Vikings.
I don't like how confidently I feel about this game. Give me Minnesota. Yeah, I broke it down like this. There's things that we know about these teams, and there's things that we don't know. What I do know is Brian Flores is a great defensive coordinator that's facing a backup quarterback that has a penchant for putting the ball in danger. I do know that Kevin O'Connell is a floor raiser of quarterbacks with the way he calls offenses and develops them. And I know that – actually, this is one I don't know, but I think I know this – do we know that this is this much of a downgrade between J.J. McCarthy and Carson Wentz? I mean, we're talking about this number being like 5.5, and then the injury gets announced. We get down to like this 3-point mark, and in fact, when I was on the air, it went down to 2.5 briefly. J.J. McCarthy's looked awful for 7 of the 8 quarters that he's played, but we're saying that there's this big difference from a point spread perspective between him and Carson Wentz. I don't buy it. Give me the Minnesota Vikings, and I'd take it a step further. I think they're kind of viable for a survivor play, too, if you're out there.
Woohoo! John Von Tobel on ESPN Las Vegas. All right, Jets are getting nearly a touchdown against the Buccaneers.
I think Adam Hill will like this. Give me Tyrod Taylor and the Jets. He is a very confident backup, as we all know. There is no downgrade between him and Justin Fields. They play the position a little bit different. And don't look now, but look, I like the Bucs. I've got like this one seed ticket on them from 17-1 before the season started. I think Baker Mayfield's great. The injuries are starting to pile up. We know about the ones on offense with Godwin and Wirfs. They're starting to lose some guys, including Kalijah Kansi, along the defensive line as well. So they're starting to get a little banged up, and I think that's going to be good enough for Tyrod Taylor to just lead. Give me a competent performance here, and I think you're going to be able to stay inside of that number against Tampa Bay.
Will the Kansas City Chiefs pound the Giants?
This one I'm not too sure about. I would lean toward no, and if you told me just pick it from a spread perspective, I'd probably go with New York. Like, maybe that was the one big last gasp for New York. But I will say this. That Friday game against the Chargers still really does bother me back in Brazil. That secondary looked awful, very similar to the 2021 group that I think started the year 3-4, didn't really look particularly great. And I still don't know if I trust these pass catchers entirely. The problem is I just don't know if there's going to be enough pressure put on Patrick Mahomes to actually get that done and if Russell Wilson is going to be able to keep up. So small lean toward Kansas City, but it's not one that I feel confident in at all, and I'm actually angry you have to watch this on a Sunday night. We don't need the Giants on Sunday night. Enough with this nonsense.
If you're a dog player going back to week 13 of last year, you're a loser because the favorites around the NFL since week 13 of last year had this incredible run. We're talking about NFL closing favorites this season of 4 points or more are 12-0 straight up. Going back to last year, week 13, they're 64-7. There are 7 of those spots this week. I would think there'd be some opportunities for some teasers.
Yeah. I mean, I think you could do that. I think so. If I remember correctly off the top of my head, the 3 teams that I had pointed to that were like the danger ones were the 2 NFC South teams, the Falcons and the Bucks. And then I think the obvious one, too, is the Ravens just because of the quality opponent they're facing and the Detroit Lions. It's like those 2 teams go down. Like, I think that's going to be something where you could play into them. I'm not the biggest fan, especially with how much teasers are, to not play them unless you're getting through those 3 and those 7s, considering how key those 2 numbers are. But I think either way, you're going to be – like, I called for chaos last week, and we almost got it. I think this might be the week where we eventually get it. So the coin has to – the shoe has to drop at some point.
Last week, John and I were able to hang out for, I think, 4 minutes. We crossed over at the Westgate in the Superbook. You were very intense. I don't know what you were – if you were following, like, the end of games, you were getting your bets in. There was a dog on the scene. Big Arthur was there, so that was quite the scene. How'd you make out in the afternoon?
Last week was a week in which I know I'm going to get my rear end kicked this week because last week was great for me. So So I know that that's going to probably revert back to form this week, but one of the stronger weeks that, that I've had in a while in the NFL.
Next time we have a booth or a pod, and by the way, make sure you check in as a listener on the specials on those. Chicken fingers on JVT. See you, buddy.
See you, man.